step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
Welcome on in to the Back-to-Back Champcast.
Ooh.
Man.
Ooh, that felt good.
Woo.
Got chilly in here when you said that.
Back-to-back, baby.
Oh, feels good. Gotta be honest. Okay, man, that does feel good.
That feels really good.
I wasn't
expecting it. Say it again. Say it with your chest.
Back-to-back champs pod.
Back-to-back champs pod.
Gonna have to change that Twitter handle.
Ooh, man, that feels good. Dang. Woo! 47-24, Cam.
That is not what I expected the score to be.
Yeah. I don't think any of us expected that, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's funny because the bets that we said in the preview were correct. Utah plus 2.5 and over 67.5. But this is not how I thought.
47-24.
Not like this.
Wow. Holy smokes. What a game, man. Just what a game. What an effort from this Utah squad. Really just, this embodied so much of what this program is about, right? Like, you go down 17-3, things don't look great, but this team, man, this team is tough as nails, physically, mentally, and I think it's more so mentally than anything else of what the difference was in this game. This team, and Cam talked about it, they just never, unwavering belief is what he said to describe it, and that came through in this game. They ripped off 44, what was it? They went 44-7?
44-7 run after
the second quarter.
After 17-3, it was 40, after the first quarter. Yeah, the first quarter, 17-3. I think it was that was the first quarter. Anyway, USC 17-3 lead, and then 44-7 Utah. Utah absolutely, obviously the fourth quarter was, I mean, the whole fourth quarter was garbage time, frankly.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, it felt like it. Because I think technically there USC was in it in the fourth quarter, but a lot like the 2019 Utah-Oregon game, right? It's like technically in the fourth quarter, Utah was within one score, but it, like, no one watching that game felt like Utah was anywhere close to winning in the fourth quarter, and that's how it was with USC.
Right.
With Oregon. I mean, just absolute, because yeah, the Yasmin touchdown, for instance. First of all, my goodness, what an effort!
Man.
But Utah was up 7 at that point.
Yeah,
it was not, and like in my memory, that was part of the route that was in the blowout, like just piling on the points, right? But the game was very close at that point, very much a 3-and-out, a turnover, a stalled drive there. Would have, the game could have easily changed, but it was all gas, no brakes, man. They kept that pedal down, and that's when Yasmin just kind of nudged that guy off on his way into the end zone.
Just incredible.
That felt like the feather that broke the camel's back in that case.
For sure. Holy moly.
Holy cow. But yeah, second and third quarter, that Utah team just absolutely showed everything you've heard about Kyle Whittingham teams, everything you've heard about Utah teams. You saw social media gushing over how physical that Utah team was on offense and defense. And in the second and third quarter, defense turned it up. Offense obviously starts getting some momentum, finishing their drives. Cause they looked good in the first quarter too. They looked fine.
Right.
They couldn't finish a drive. They had a turnover. The offense never looked like it was a problem. They just weren't quite putting it together. And the defense just clamped down once Williams' hamstring was not 100%. That defense just, I think you said, smelled blood in the water. And
yeah.
That was it.
No
curtain call.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, man. So it's not that these Utah had these slow – it wasn't a slow start. It's just that Utah is a goddamn wagon in the second and third quarters. I looked it up. They've scored 42 touchdowns this season in the second and third quarters. They've scored 24 in the first and fourth quarters. So they are just – they're so good in the second and third quarters where, you know, they kind of get into this flow. They get into the flow of the game. They make adjustments at halftime, and they just put it on you. And that's what Utah did in this game. Fourth quarter, obviously, with three touchdowns was huge and the difference in that game. Just an incredible performance. And, you know, we're going to talk more about the game. Cam, do we have any mullet, any business that we need to address the coat drive? What's the latest on our coat drive with the Give Them Hell, Bring Them podcast?
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. Now that we're done with the season officially as back-to-back champs, we're working with Give Them Hell Pod to do a coat and blanket and glove and hat and socks, any warm clothing drive for this winter to benefit the Road Home and the Salt Lake Rescue Mission. If you go to utahblockcast.com, that's our website. Almost mm-hmm. forgot it.
Yes, it is.
We'll have some information there where you can donate to our GoFundMe to help raise cash if you're not able to do coats. But for coats, keep an eye on our newsletter. The newsletter that'll be coming out Monday morning. If you're reading this, if you're hearing this, hopefully you've already gotten it. But go check out our website, utahblockcast.com. We'll have a public article there where you can go see how to easily donate. We'd love to raise enough money and get enough coats to do 250 coats. I think we're going to blow that away again. Really, a huge shout out to the Give Them Hell fans and boys for their help there. Garrett, Jeff, and all of the BYU fans have already done a ton, frankly, to help us out with this. So
yeah,
Utah fans, it's our turn to start contributing. So grab those used coats, blankets, hats, gloves, anything you have that's donatable. Start collecting them. And then, like I said, in that at utahblockcast.com, we'll have information on where you can donate those, on our pickup times where we'll start going around collecting those, and everything there. So go check that out. And then we probably will run this all the way through like December, right? It doesn't need to, not a short term thing, but spread the word. We'd love to raise as much as we can here, and like I said, watch out for pickup and drop off probably in the next week through the rest of the month.
Perfect. Yeah, so thank you everybody that's contributed so far, and yeah, we're going to keep this thing going to continue getting coats, getting clothing, getting warm clothing, donations, whatever it can be. We want to help the community out as best we can. So thank you, Cam, for putting that together with Jeff and Garrett and those guys, and thank you to everybody that's contributed so far. So,
I think we've already raised like $1,000 or so for the coat drive.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. So, in addition to the coats, there's already a couple of BYU fans who are business owners put a couple of drop off like bins in locations in their stores with signs where you can donate and stuff too. Utah fans, if you're a small business owner, if you're in the area, even if you're not, if you have a space in your store or something where we could put a bin, or where you're able to put a bin and we could send you a sign or a graphic that you could put up in your store to collect them, that would be so helpful. Please get at us in our DMs at BlockCastPod.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, thank you guys. So let's get back to the game. Cam, I'm curious, the fan base in the stadium, I was surprised.
Absolutely.
I knew
electric.
Utah fans were going to show up. But I thought at best it was going to be 55-45 in favor of USC.
I did too. I thought I was more pessimistic, right? USC had at least 3 weeks to plan on this.
Right.
They were clearly going to the Pac-12 championship game, barring absolute, you know, disaster. They could have bought this game out much earlier. They had the earlier allotment like Utah had in prior years, right? Like they had a very good opportunity to fill up the stadium. They didn't.
No.
Utah fans, I mean, get all the credit for having 4 days notice on this. And really, really four full only days, because you had to wait until after midnight the day on Sunday morning before you even knew. You had to wait for that Washington game. Yeah, anyway, so Utah on such short notice. On
incredible.
On a weeknight. In another state, 7 hour, unbelievable turnout.
With the snowstorm to, you know, getting there, snowstorm.
Absolutely
just
amazing.
It was crazy, man.
Yeah, it was probably, it was at least 50-50 Utah from my
at
angle
least.
In the press box. It was probably closer to 60-40 Utah. When the stadium cleared out in the fourth quarter, you could get a much better look seeing who was around and who wasn't, at, like, you know, differentiating the reds and things like that. And you could actually see, like, oh, wow, this was a very Utah-heavy crowd. And, like, you could hear it in the stadium. We were on the USC kind of side and corner, the Utah press box up there. So, like, we were right above where the USC band was. So we could hear them very loudly and clearly when they were – but, like, the Utah fan side section was – you know, probably some bias, probably again recency, because we got mostly their cheers for 2/3 of the game. But that Utah fan section was so loud.
So loud.
USC's very first third down play, they had to call timeout.
Yeah.
On the very, it was their fourth play of the game, they had to call timeout because that section was absolutely deafening.
It was insane. I could not believe it, walking out onto the field and just seeing the entire Utah side just in everybody in red. It was amazing. The volume on field level, it was so loud. Utah fans are such a positive factor for Utah in these types of games, right?
Kyle said
Utah fans are incredible.
Yeah, Kyle said it in the postgame. I think you asked Kyle about it, if I'm not mistaken. Asked about the fan presence. Did
no,
you not?
Sammy did.
Excuse me. That's Sammy of UteZone.com. Shout out to Sammy Moore.
Yes. Shout out to Sammy.
She asked Kyle in the postgame, about that fan presence. And he's always so complimentary of the fans, but he was dead on. It was, if not, I don't want to say the difference maker that night, because the Utah team was just so physically dominant that night. But a huge positive and, like, absolutely matching the team's energy that night in that moment. Like, it can't be understated what kind of presence that is. And frankly, and maybe this is just me, and so let me know what you think about this. I've always had a sense that Utah fans didn't actually travel as well as we thought they did. I don't know why. Because it's always kind of been like, well, yeah, Utah's traveled well to big games, traveled well to the Sugar Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl, but that's because those were rarities, right? Those were, certain flashes in the pan, opportunities you couldn't miss.
Right.
As a sports fan.
Sure.
But, like, watching Utah in a back-to-back Pac-12 championship game, they've already been. They went just the year before. They just had the Rose Bowl. They just experienced a higher high. It seemed, or could easily have seemed.
Yeah.
Because they, you could not have expected this result coming into this game.
No.
And for Utah fans to show up the way they did, it really, I mean, frankly, it'll be so great to see again in the Rose Bowl, because we had a similar problem
in
the
Rose Bowl. I'm so excited for it.
With Ohio State and Utah because of the red problem.
Right.
But if Utah fans show up to the Rose Bowl and we see another huge Utah turnout, and we see that great, like, Penn State Navy blue versus Utah.
Man,
Utes red.
I cannot wait.
Man, like I said, it was probably, maybe it was just my pessimism bias, but seeing Utah in the stadium that night, I was just like, okay, this fan base is for real. This is a big program fan base now.
Right. No, absolutely. I think, like, that's the case. I think last year making it to the Pac-12 championship game, then the Rose Bowl, seeing how many fans traveled to Florida, that's a tough place to get to. I mean, obviously it's a destination place, being Florida and Jackson, Gainesville itself,
but it's not
a destination place.
It's not LA. Not fly into LAX and take a cab to the stadium.
But you're staying in Jacksonville or Orlando, where you've got a little bit, you know, it's a little bit more of a destination vacation
probably more comparable to getting to somewhere like Logan.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit like that. And, you know, Utah fans showed up to that game. They travel so well to these LA games, and now you make it to Las Vegas again. Just an incredible sight to see. And driving down, me and Kendra drove down. We all drove down Thursday night, and just seeing the caravan of headlights in the rearview mirror.
We had traffic.
It was insane.
Like Thursday night traffic in the middle of the state.
Fillmore, Beaver, like Cedar City, it was traffic the entire way. It was insane to see just the convoy of Utah fans. Not all, not everybody on the road was Utah fans, but a good majority of them were. And so just, you know, Utah fans, man, impressive showing. Cam, you mentioned it in you know, as you were going, the fan base made a big difference. But ultimately, I think the biggest difference in the game was the physicality of this Utah football team, specifically the physicality in the trenches. You know, Utah is a team, they want to establish the run and they want to take away the run. That's the MO under Kyle Whittingham, right? And it takes, you know, it can take time to get the run game going. But when they get it going, man, it's tough to stop. And that's when you get these athletes, Makai Bernard, JJ, you get them some space, and they're the type of athletes to take it to the house, which they did
in
that fourth quarter.
We talked in the, I think it was after the Stanford game, about Utah, you know, Utah kind of running into the backs of offensive linemen and being like, man, what is going on? Like, why can't they move? And then realizing that those offensive linemen are already 4 or 5 yards downfield. The line has shifted that far that fast.
Right.
And we saw, you know, a little bit of that feeling in that third quarter in particular, but third and fourth quarter, where it was just like, oh, this Utah offensive line is just moving people.
They're moving people.
They're not creating holes. They're not creating movement and, you know, and finding gaps in defenses with misdirection. They're just moving guys out of the way.
Yeah. And it was so impressive. You go back, and even in the first quarter, Michael Mokofisi, the right guard, had a couple of really impressive blocks up front where he took the defensive tackle, and by the end of the play, he's on the other side of the line, on the left side of the line, and just Makai Bernard had lanes to run through, running behind, you know, Michael Mokofisi. Keaton Bills had a couple of those same types of blocks. This Utah offensive line was just moving this USC defensive front essentially wherever they wanted them to go. It was an impressive display.
That's not a thing Utah's done to USC's defenses before. Like, and maybe this is a product of Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch and the defense they aren't building there, right? Like, but it's USC's defenses have always been very tough. They're always very talented. They're stacked with very talented guys, and their defensive fronts are usually big. They're usually formidable. In 2019, Utah couldn't move them. Utah had,
yeah.
We were talking about why Utah didn't try going around them in the second half in that game, because Utah was insisting on trying to run Zach Moss in the middle, and it wasn't working. Here we are years later, we're still seeing some of that. but it was working on Friday.
Yeah.
We did not have that problem. We did not have to, you know, sit here talking about why Andy Ludwig was stubbornly running up the middle. Andy Ludwig was stubbornly running up the middle because USC's defense wasn't stopping him.
Right. No, they weren't. They had no answer for the run game. And it was like, that's the thing, is like, this run game is simple. Like, it essentially just comes down to out-physicaling the opponent. You know, they did nothing special. I think they ran one counter play in that game. Other than that, it was inside zone to the left, inside zone to the right, a couple outside zones here and there, the jet sweep with Jalen Dixon. But other than that, like, that's the run game you're looking at. And yet Utah was able to ended up with, what, 230 yards on the ground, a couple of big runs. It was just, you know, the softening process is how I described it. And I think Utah, you know, talks about it. Andy Ludwig describes it that way. The softening process where you just remain committed to the run. You beat them up. You're physical. You soften them up, and it creates more push late in the game. It also creates opportunities to take shots down the field, which we saw with Thomas Yasmin on the big 60-yard scamper. That was a play action pass.
You want to talk about softening? My goodness. That DB,
was something.
That DB caught Thomas Yasmin like a pillow. That DB caught Thomas Yasmin like he was falling out of a window, and he didn't want him to be hurt.
It was so
he was like, let me help. Oh, don't let that goal line trip you up. Let me make sure you get over that safely.
Thomas Yasmin came up to me after the game. I was on the field. I was shooting photos, and Thomas came up to me. He's all, I'll give him credit. The defender like watched film in that game. He thought I was going to hurdle him. He came to tackle me like I was going to hurdle him. And I did. So
he thought he came to tackle somebody who he didn't think would be, yeah, he thought he was going to be grabbing Thomas Yasmin's legs at 4 feet in the air.
So and, silver lining is, you know, yeah, at least he watched film and was prepared for the Thomas Yasmin hurdle. It's just, you know, you've got a 260-pound brute.
I'll tell you who felt like he was 600 pounds. I'll tell you who didn't know Thomas Yasmin used to be a rugby player, and that was the DB who was like, I'll bet I can tackle him high.
Yeah, I got him, guys.
He'll get him right around the chest, right around the body. The physicality. Just Thomas Yasmin caught that ball at the 40 and was thinking end zone, and the USC DB was thinking maybe he'll go out of bounds. because he just simply he caught that ball. He had green space in front of him and a USC jersey, and Thomas Yasmin was thinking end zone the whole time.
And I think so. Going back to it, so Utah's committed to the run. The defensive back that was responsible for him from the snap was 22, I think, is Sierra Wright is who it was that tried to make the play to break it up or make the tackle after on the sideline first,
yeah,
before Yasmin started rumbling. He bit down on the run action. And like that's part of this process, right? You stay committed to the game. These are the types of plays that open up, that become more available as you remain committed to the run. It opens up these shots to Thomas Yasmin down the field, and you get him in space where he can just rumble and just do his rugby thing and just try his way into the end zone. Like, just an impressive display. And again, it all comes back from the physicality up front and establishing the run and getting that going. And it was, man, it worked perfectly on Friday night.
While we're on tight ends, though, what a night from Dalton, who was very
clearly hampered,
very clearly beat up. There was a couple of plays notably that I saw where he would catch the ball around 7 yards with 10 to gain or so, something of that note, right? Like maybe it was 8 yards, 11 to gain type of thing. And would be clearly short of the marker and would simply outwill a USC defender or two for the extra yardage that he would need. It seemed like he always knew exactly how much yardage he needed,
yeah,
where he was on the field, and was really kind of suffering to get those yardages. There was, on the second one that I mentioned, he needed two or three guys to come help him up after the play because you could just see he's just so physically beat up. He didn't have the energy to get off the field. And it's listen, Caleb Williams is an amazing player. He was a Warrior on Friday night. Like, he was clearly hurt as well. But spare me this BS about injured players.
Serious.
It's week 13. It's week 14. Like, everyone's hurt.
Yeah.
Everyone's hurt out here.
It's so bad. I hate it. You've got Cameron Rising with a bulky-ass knee brace.
Lincoln Riley caught Cameron Rising's helmet on the sideline.
Gosh,
I almost caught it in the press box. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Cameron Rising's, like, snot is hanging in the air in Allegiant Stadium still. And we're like, I hope Caleb Williams is okay. Like, God bless Caleb Williams and his hamstring. Like, yeah, he was hurt. He was clearly hurt. Like, and he was worried. Caleb Williams is maybe the best player I've ever seen live. And he wasn't after that injury. Shit happens.
I'm sorry, dude. Yeah, like, sorry.
I don't know what to tell you. Like, I mean,
it's tough.
It happens.
It's tough. Man. Utah's dealing with injuries of their own.
Maybe instead of painting your nails pregame, maybe you stretch your hamstrings pregame. I don't know what to tell you.
Sorry, guy. Like, miss us with all of that injury talk. Okay.
I'm sorry, man. Like, listen, we're all hurt out here.
Yes.
I'm 31. Sorry. It's week 14. I'm tired. I'm playing injured out here.
Golly.
No, I'm just like.
Like, sure, just, Cam maybe was a little more mobile than Caleb in that game after his injury. But like the.
Devon Bailey couldn't move.
He barely. Yeah, Devon Bailey could barely catch punts. Like, that's how bad he was. You know, that's. He was hurt.
Yeah, I'm like, listen, Caleb Williams, it was the best player on the field when that game started. he was best player in college football this year. He should win the Heisman. Like, I'm fine with saying all of that. Like, he got hurt. I'm sorry, spare me. Utah had hurt players too. Utah had hurt players for the last half of the season. I'm sorry that your best player got injured partway through the biggest game of the year. Utah's best player got injured, you know, games ago, and it sucked. Mm-hmm. And they lost because of it. It happens.
It's going to be really interesting. Once Cam's injury, I think, is made public, which it will be in time. Like, somebody's going to say, oh, yeah, Cam had such and such an injury, you know, a few weeks from now, a few months from now, maybe. You know, if he goes through the draft process, it'll be revealed, like, what his injury was. And it's going to be eye-opening for people, I think, for all of us, that to learn what he's been dealing with. You don't choose to wear an offensive lineman knee brace. You know, you don't choose to wear that unless there's something serious going on. So
get real.
Yeah.
I'm just so over this excuse making that the only reason Utah won was because, like, listen, man, unless Caleb Williams was supposed to be tackling JJ out there, like, I don't think his hamstring is the reason Utah ran for 223 yards and passed for 310.
Sorry. It's not. Yeah. Sorry. Get it's not. It. Yeah. Sorry. No.
No matter what happened, Caleb Williams, you still gave up 47 yards and got your absolute ass kicked on the offensive and defensive line for 2/3 of that game.
Sorry, man.
No,
sorry.
I'm sorry, man. Like, Caleb Williams is a great player, and he escapes a lot of sacks. He was going to get sacked a lot in that second half, regardless of how healthy he was, because that offensive line quit.
Yeah, absolutely they did. They absolutely did. And that was, like, man, okay. All right. I love that we've brought this up, because this, I was thinking about this a lot over the weekend. Kyle Whittingham, there was, I think it was either before or after the Oregon game, but talked about Cam's injuries. And talked about, hey, if you're out there, you're expected to make plays. Set it, put it out there on the record, like, hey, this is no excuse. Like, if you're on the field, you are expected to make plays. And just, I'm so happy that being said then was a lesson learned then, and, you know, and manifested itself tonight, or not tonight, but Friday night. With this
it's always
game.
Good. It's always good to say the thing you want to say weeks before you need to say it.
Before you need to say it. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
No, I totally agree. And again, like, no disrespect to Caleb Williams. Like, he played his heart out and really did have a gritty performance. I just, spare me all of this BS about it being, like, the most amazing thing anyone's ever seen, and the only reason Utah won. Utah's had hurt players for weeks. It happens.
Like, it happens.
It happens. It sucks, and you play through it. And otherwise, if you can't play through it, you put in your backup quarterback, and they win the game for you, unless they can't.
Right.
And so Lincoln Riley, when you're out here, like, he wouldn't let me take him out. What the hell kind of head coach can't take his quarterback out if he's hurt? No, I'm serious. Like, this is bullcrap. This is Lincoln Riley hiding behind saying, Caleb Williams wasn't hurt enough for me to take out of the game, and I'm going to say that he was and wouldn't let me. I'm going to weaken myself and my position as head coach to make an excuse for why this team lost. That's freaking bullshit.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
He was either hurt enough to play or he wasn't. Or hurt enough to not play or he wasn't.
I love it.
I'm sorry, man. I'm over it. Like, I've heard it for 3 days now. He is a great player, and he was definitely injured that night. Tough shit.
Yeah. Damn. Woo! I did not. Woo! Damn.
Man.
Cam, with the heat. Woo! I love it. I was not prepared for this. I didn't know we were going
to. I frankly wasn't either.
Yeah. This,
I
wow.
Just, no, I'm, woo! Just, I'm over here. Woo! Like, you lost that game by 3 scores.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear
that's
any.
That's not all on Caleb Williams' hamstring. Sorry.
No. Not when he played the whole game. Not when he played every snap.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Like, you if he had come out in the second quarter and you wanted to come at me with that, okay. Sure, Caleb Williams didn't play. Your Heisman favorite. I get it.
Yeah.
That's a good reason for Utah to win. He played every offensive snap that game. So get out of here with Caleb Williams was hurt. No, he wasn't. He played every snap.
Played every snap.
When Cam Rising was hurt, Bryson Barnes played and won.
Yep. No excuse. No excuses.
On the road with short notice.
No excuses. Just I love saying. That. I love that about Utah. It's just love that dynamic and that just how they approach those types of things. Just no excuse. Next man up. It's how they operate. It's who they are and how they operate and everything that they do. So, with that, Caleb Williams, obviously injured. Morgan sensed it early on and sensed it in the sense that
blood in the water.
Boy, he sent numbers. He got after him, sent pressure.
Those were the Utah Land Sharks out there in the second half, man. They
Buddy.
Were.
Woo! Buddy blitzed on 70% of dropbacks.
Which
70%.
Blitz meaning five or more guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
70%.
So 7-0. What's the average typically? What do you expect from Utah?
From Utah, so average is about 20 to 25 of all dropbacks. It's about the average across college football. Utah is towards the top. They'll blitz about 30% of the time on average in a season.
So Utah was about 2.3 times heavier on the blitz than normal.
Morgan
so
was
for
just
every
blitz.
So for every one for blitz, every right. one blitz Morgan might
blitz
have normally
left.
Called
blitz
he
middle.
Called 2.3 on Friday night.
Yep. And I think so yeah. I think like getting back to it, like Morgan sensed that there was blood in the water. And I think for Utah that didn't click until Gabe Reed got that first sack. And then once Gabe Reed got that first sack, which I think came in the second quarter, late in the second quarter even. I think that's when it really started to settle in and the players could smell the blood in the water.
It was the 4-minute mile, man. Like it's sacking Caleb Williams is like the 4-minute mile. Once you see it done, it's just like, oh, it's possible.
It's possible.
We can get this. And like, again, he was clearly hampered by injury, but like it, I mean,
but still after
seven
how
sacks,
he played, right.
Seven sacks for this defense against anyone is good.
Is
this defense
damn
didn't
impressive.
Get a lot of sacks this year. They just didn't. They weren't. They
right.
had trouble finishing at the quarterback this season. They didn't on Friday. That's notable, no matter who you're playing.
Yep. Seven sacks.
Unbelievable performance. I think Gabe Reed might have been my defensive player of the night. He was,
so good.
I think he had three on his own.
Two.
Maybe two. Was it two solo?
Two and two and a tackle for loss.
Okay. Just it was living in the backfield for... In a game where I was most worried about Utah's ability to do what they did, get pressure in the backfield, because they were down guys, they were down pressure makers with Jonah, who did play, but who was, again, get this, playing through injury. You'll never believe it. playing through a leg injury. Who can believe it?
Yeah.
But did play, very injured. Van, who is, get this, out for the season with a leg injury.
Damn.
Can you believe it?
Damn.
Man.
Damn.
And yet Utah got seven sacks.
Somehow, some way.
Poor Caleb Williams.
Poor
him. Caleb Williams getting yeah. sacked by all those Utah Man. Backups from injury.
Seven sacks, 35 pressures in that game. They smelled blood in the water, and they got after it.
Love
and,
it.
You know, I think this is... It's amazing, right? So
42,
this is
42 snaps where Caleb Williams was feeling Utah heat.
Whew,
that's
buddy.
A lot of snaps.
That's a ton.
That's a tough day in the backfield for a guy who doesn't have to deal with that a lot, right? Like,
no.
Like that's a tough day in the backfield for a guy who does get it. Like 42, because how many snaps did USC have all night? They had
68, I think.
68. So almost two thirds, just shy of two thirds of every single snap. Not every single passing play.
Jeez.
Every single snap.
That's
Utah had guys in Caleb
crazy.
Williams' face.
That's crazy.
Unbelievable night from that front seven. And just, I mean, and again, like on that note, there were some big plays. There were
sure.
some, there were some lost coverage, but like that was the best game that defensive back group has played all season. In my opinion, they were locked on guys at times. Like there
yeah.
were, there were times when Caleb Williams got sacked because he simply had nothing to nowhere to go with the ball. Throwing the ball would have been a much worse decision for him.
Before we get to the defensive second, I want to make one last point on the defensive line.
Yeah.
That game Friday night contrasted with the opening game versus Florida. Night and day difference. Night and day difference in what we saw from the defensive front. Defensive line, linebackers, just a remarkable showing of coaching and development, guys sticking to it, getting better, working their craft. It was a completely different defensive front on Friday night. Just and so I tweeted about it. Lewis Powell, Luther Ellis deserve a lot of credit for developing guys, and not just, you know, not just Van Fillinger, not just Jonah Ellis, not just Junior. It was the other. It was Connor O'Toole. It was Gabe Reed, who, you know, grad transfer. But Samote Pepa, his progression, Aliki Vamahi, his progression over the last month has been remarkable. So really awesome to see the defensive line and linebackers. Mahmoud Diabate was in the backfield all night. Really good to see that.
He had two massive hits in that game.
Oh my gosh.
One on the last one on Caleb Williams, right? For that last fumble.
Huge.
And then the one on the sideline on a play just
on the tight end. Yeah, on their little tight end.
Oh my goodness. He hit that tight end and I like
sent him like seven yards
out of bounds. You ever been hit 20 feet?
Bro, sent him.
You ever been hit by somebody and ended up 20 feet from where you were before?
His soul was in the stands, bro. He sent him.
Bro, that USC, everyone on that USC sideline, soul was halfway home by then.
Yeah.
They were all done. Firmly in their seats on the plane.
Oh, by then. Man.
Their souls beat the traffic.
But that was the last point on the defensive line. Great, great showing from them. Love seeing it. Connor O'Toole, man, the progress he's made specifically against the run. You know, praise for getting after the quarterback and all that. But he's made progress against the run, playing with better leverage, playing tougher. Which you go back to that Oregon game. You know, he got pushed around a little bit in that game. And so in the matter of 2 weeks, he's shown a good deal of progress as a run defender, and that's awesome. So so shout out to the defensive line. The defensive secondary, man, I'm excited about the outlook of this group. Sione Vaque, holy moly. We've been talking about him for a while now, but this dude.
Sione Vaque might be the second best player. I think he might be the second best player on that defense.
He was everywhere on Friday night.
Like, all due respect to Colt Bishop, I think Sione Vaque might be the second best player on that defense right now.
I might be with you, bro.
He is a monster at his size and his playing ability. He plays DB like a linebacker, but he can run with guys like a DB. He's the perfect cover safety. He can still run downhill in run support and is such a great tackler. But he's so good in coverage.
That's the thing, right? It's like he's so violent coming downhill, making tackles. He can make tackles against tremendous athletes, but he can also make plays in coverage. He had how many pass breakups in that game? A couple of which came out against Taj Washington. And others like he's
Taj Washington, who is, for the record, a higher rated recruit than Utah's ever had. I actually don't know if that's true.
No, but Taj Washington was rated an 82. Like he wasn't rated all that good. But he was a freshman. He was an all like I think he was the freshman of the year in the SEC.
Yeah. No. See, there you go. See,
so that's what
bad example.
But still.
I grasped. But no, just like again, USC talented guys is more the point I was making. Generally yes. Speaking, Clark Phillips on Jordan Addison that game for a lot of snaps, a very like strength on strength, best on best type scenario for those two players in the conference. Probably the best receiver and best DB in the conference, I think. Listen, it's almost impossible for a cornerback to win that battle in college football.
Yeah.
The rules, the gameplay, it's just not on your side. And for the most part, I think aside from one or two snaps, Clark Phillips won almost every time on Friday night. Not a surprise. He wins almost every time on every snap, but
he was only targeted that game. He was only targeted four times in that game, and one of which he slipped. That was the big play. That was the only reception he allowed for Jordan Addison in coverage.
Yeah, there's a couple of times Utah was in zone coverage and gave up big. I haven't rewatched the game in detail yet. I've watched little things yet here and there, but was watching the other games yesterday. I'm curious to see kind of what happened there. This team has had weird breakdowns in zone coverage all year here and there. So that kind of stuff is just kind of I almost chalk up to like Utah's going to give up two balls to broken zone coverage every game this year. Clark has just been unbeatable in man coverage. Took their best option off the field, essentially, when he was on him.
Literally.
He spent some time on other guys, too, and played well. But really, really just kind of took Addison
out of the game.
Took Addison out of the game.
Yeah.
Addison finished the game with 5 catches for 65 yards and 0 touchdowns.
Right.
And his long was 48.
And that was the play.
17 yards on 4 other catches.
That 48-yard reception was the play that Clark slipped.
17 yards on 4 other receptions. One of those 17 yards, like 6 of those 17 yards, were when Zamaya Vaughn was guarding him in the first quarter on a play, and he had a 6-yard hitch. So it's like those little things where it's like Clark Phillips owned that matchup. Aside from
and that's huge for stumbling. Utah, right? That's huge when he can do that, when he can eliminate your top pass catcher.
It allows guys like Sione Vaki to be so aggressive in their coverage and play that way. It's having a guy like that who is so good allows your other guys to play with their hair on fire. It allows your guy. It allows you to make up for mistakes that your other DBs make that game, right? Like Utah played a really good game defensively as a unit, despite one player having maybe their toughest game of the year. And it's like, but part of the reason guys like RJ Huber in this case had a couple of tough plays on Friday that ended up in touchdowns. But like part of the reason is because he plays with his hair on fire in a lot of other scenarios. He can play more aggressively because there's effectively a guy taken off the field in the defense right. with Clark Phillips guarding Addison. And like having that ability, it gives Utah that ability to play that type of way. If Clark isn't there, if you replace Clark with an average defensive back, RJ Hubert has to play the game differently.
Very differently.
And that's, yeah, it's, and so like, it's just that a player of Clark's caliber can change the way your defense plays. And this entire Utah defense is so much better because he is just so good.
And Clark had maybe the most important play of the game. It's third down. USC's in the red zone. It's what third? I think they're like
14-3.
14-3 at this point.
Yep. On the 2 or 3 yard line.
Yep.
Yeah.
Clark gets the pass breakup. Maybe the most important play that, you know, will not be talked about, and it should be. And I think I've seen a lot of people actually talk about it, but it's one of those things where it's like that play right there, though it seems, you know, not super significant in that moment, right? You stopped a touchdown. It's huge. Huge for Utah.
So, and most people, like Bill Plaschke of the LA Times, wrote this week very critically of Lincoln Riley and that decision in that moment. That felt like the turning point of the game.
It really did.
Clark Phillips made that breakaway and, like, you know, in a way, when he broke up that pass at the goal line, the game changed because Utah then went from possibly being down 21-3 early in the second quarter. That was with 12 minutes left in the second quarter. Early in the second quarter, they ultimately go down 2 touchdowns. They score the next 3 or 4 touchdowns of the game. Or excuse me, next 3 touchdowns and then a field goal of the game to take a 10-point lead going into the fourth quarter. Like, yeah. The momentum shift there, if USC goes up 21-3, Utah's now down 4 full scores
mm-hmm.
early in the second quarter of that game. I don't know if that team can recover, but that stop is such
huge.
A big moment, a big confidence moment for that defense too, who really settled and locked in after that. Curious. Think going a little bit further on that defense. The next quarter, the third quarter, is really when I think this team showed. So going to third quarter, 17-17, you know, rematch. Let's start over. Utah comes out, quickly scores, right? They have the ball. No, I think they punt on their first possession, yeah? Quick punt, defense, a great stop to start the second half. And that first stop by the defense after Utah punted the ball, that's where it was like, oh, this defense is locked in still. Coming out of halftime, it was like, who's going to win the adjustment game? Is Lincoln Riley going to, you know, be able to scheme around Caleb Williams not being able to move as well? Is Utah going to be able to you know, pin its ears back and with him hurt? And you saw the defense be nails in those first couple of drives, allow Utah to get back, allow Utah to take a lead in the third quarter. But in that third quarter, while Utah's offense didn't struggle, right? Like, they didn't come out hot in that third quarter. Not like you would think in a 30-point half,
right?
And so, in that third quarter, the defense allowed 1 yard. USC...
1 yard.
USC, I think, had 12 plays. Let me go back and look. I don't have it right here. I want to say they had 12 or 15 plays. They got 3 feet.
3 feet. They got 1 yard in that quarter.
Utah won the game in the third quarter, even though their offense wasn't playing its best, because Utah's defense gave up 3 feet to the best offense maybe in the country.
That's incredible. Yo, that's incredible.
Anyone tries to tell you this defensive performance was bad, just punch him in the square in the nose.
1 yard in the third quarter.
Absolutely amazing performance against a bad offense.
That is impressive.
And that's not a great offense. That's an elite offense. That is maybe the best offensive mind we have in college football today.
Wow. Three straight three and outs.
They got 1 yard.
Yeah, three straight three and outs in that quarter. That's and I think they said it on the broadcast that USC's never had back to back three and outs all season long.
Love it.
Utah went 1, 2, 3.
Utah on their first third down that we mentioned earlier in the show when they held USC to the when USC had to go for it on fourth down on that first drive. When the fans were so loud that USC called a timeout, that was USC's first third and three or less conversion this season. They didn't pick up.
Wow.
Listen to that again.
That's crazy.
In week 14, in their 13th game of the season, USC had a third and three that they did not pick up. It's the first time that happened this season.
That's crazy.
Utah held that offense to 1 yard in the third quarter.
That's insane.
And then in the fourth quarter, the USC defense gave up fully.
Totally.
Like you mentioned, their souls went back to the bus. And Utah's offense just claimed all of the points that were available. Man. And so again, spare me all of this, but our offense bullshit. But your defense. Your defense stopped playing after the third quarter, and Utah's offense just feasted.
Well, I'm sure they were tired. Utah held the ball for over 11 minutes in the third quarter.
Again, won the game in the third quarter without points. Right?
That's insane.
The scoreboard shows that 7-0 in that quarter.
Yep.
And just Utah, so many of those points you saw in the fourth quarter were because Utah just mauled them in the third.
Destroyed them.
And the second.
Yeah. They're a wagon in the second and third quarter, bro.
Absolutely.
They are so good in those quarters.
They brought a box full of nails for their pillowcase in the pillow fight.
Yeah.
And USC did not.
Well, I think what I loved about this game, this felt like the other guy's game.
Yes, it did.
Right? So Dalton still was a major factor in this game. Cam, obviously.
Yasmin doesn't make his catch if he doesn't have a guy bearing down on him in tight coverage, right? Like,
right.
Yeah, you open up other opportunities because you're Dalton.
Right. And so this is the thing, and this was something that we talked about in the Blockcast Discord earlier this week was, you know, Dalton didn't do anything super special against USC, or Utah didn't do anything special, super special, to scheme Dalton open against USC back in October 15th. All Dalton was doing, I mean, he made a couple really impressive grabs, obviously, up the seam and down the sideline. Incredible plays. But all Dalton did, the majority of his work, he was just finding the soft spot in the zone.
Yep.
That's all it was, right? And so I would venture to say 9, 10 of his receptions, he's just squatting in the zone. Like, that's all it was. And so, USC was going to come into this hyper-focused on Dalton Kincaid. And we saw it in the game. There was bracket coverage. There was just a major point of emphasis on stopping, limiting Dalton Kincaid. And that opened up opportunities for others, namely Money Parks.
Ooh.
Jalen Dixon.
Ooh.
And Thomas Yasmin.
Ooh.
Utah's other guys.
Who had the better play on the day, Money Parks or Thomas Yasmin?
Oh, man.
Because aside from the collision that allowed Parks to break that free, right? And then the foot race, which, like, in and of itself is just so fast.
So fast.
But, like, love Dalton trying to get the block down there, by the way, and just having to lay
to the whistle, baby. To the whistle.
But the catch. The catch in traffic to go up and get that. He was covered. Cam made a great throw between two guys to get in there. And what a play, too.
I think I might go with that money reception, that touchdown reception. That play, if we're talking about...
Because at least in the money play, the guys were trying to tackle
They
him,
were
you
know? Trying, right? Yeah, you know, they're still in it. They're still trying. but that play, and I think, you know, they went to money early in that game, too. He caught one over the middle early in that game in the first quarter. And you're thinking, okay, all right. And then Jalen Dixon getting involved. You know, it was tough seeing him fumble.
Yeah, that first quarter one was good. The little drag across the middle. Another good catch that was high that Cam left a little behind him and he went up and got. Yeah, great game for money.
Yeah, great game for money. Jalen had a great game. So he fumbles the ball. And I think I loved what Utah did. They went right back to him. The next very first play on that next possession, they went right back to him. And he picks up a first down. And love seeing that from Utah. Loves them going back to him, keeping him involved, keeping him a point of emphasis on the offense side of the ball.
Going back on the Clark moment on how that kind of felt like a pivot, right? On that pass breakup, that Jalen fumble felt like the pivot back.
Right.
Like, cause it was just like, shoot, that was the moment to take the momentum back. Mm-hmm. There was, and now it's gone. And again, just, you mentioned the mental toughness. That's the question you asked to Kyle, right?
Right.
That's the question you asked in the postgame presser was about this team's mental toughness and how it compares to their physical toughness. And yeah, like it would have been so easy in that moment to feel like here's our chance, and then we lost it. You know, there was the chance and lost it, and just next drive, just kept fighting. Next drive, came back, touchdown.
Yeah, loved
drive
it.
After that, touchdown.
Loved
tie
it.
Tie game going into halftime, and then Jalen Dixon with 2 seconds left again catching the ball short of the line and fighting, or short of the touchdown line to gain, and fighting in for the touchdown.
That was so personally. That was my favorite moment of the game. This is where I shined. On the sideline. This was my moment, was this series right here, the Jalen Dixon touchdown. So to paint you a picture, I'm on the sideline. I'm shooting photos.
I think we need to back up to pregame to add some context.
Go ahead.
You've already been getting into it with this particular group.
The USC band.
On our way in, we're walking past the USC band, and one of them invited Steve to was giving Steve an L.
He was holding up an L.
He kept repeatedly asking Steve to hold this. Steve did not.
I did not. I refused.
Yeah,
I refused. So quite
strongly. You keep it. That's yours.
I stared him down.
Yeah, your L.
That's you're holding it.
Yeah,
you're the one holding it. I'm not taking it from you.
No.
So anyway, that's
fast forward to this moment.
So tone setter, that right? So we painted the
picture. Steve V band has already kicked off.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So here I am on the sideline. It's getting down to half. So the USC marching band comes down. They're surrounding the field, and I'm taking photos. I'm over by the chain gang is where I'm at.
On the far side of the field there.
On the Utah side.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah, on the Utah side. So the band is over there. And there's this band member, and he's like, oh, you know, he's
presumably a different band member.
I think so, but I don't. Okay. I'm not sure. You know, I don't know for sure. But you know, they're making noise. They're being loud for their USC defense. I gotta sneeze. That's gonna sound great on the podcast. So they're making
noise.
It'll
be in there because we don't know how to take it out.
Yeah. They're booing. You know, they're doing that thing. But there was this one where he was just like. I think so. There was a couple incompletions, and this band member.
Well, there was the Dalton drop just before
the Dalton drop. Something else prior to that, and this USC band member is just like popping off, right? Just, oh, you guys can suck. Like, oh, you guys aren't good. Like, what are you doing here? Get off the field. You know, just all this stupid stuff.
Hold this L.
And so, you know, I'm sitting there taking pictures. Jalen Dixon scores. I got a great photo of Jalen Dixon scoring. I go up to him and I'm like, I, you know, show him my camera and I zoom in on Jalen Dixon, you know, with the ball in his hands in the end zone. I was like, What do you think? Is that a good picture? That's a pretty good picture, right? That's a damn good picture is what that
turnout?
Is.
Was he a photo? Was he a media
That's
major
a touchdown.
By chance?
That's a touchdown, right? I just want you to see that I got a photo of him in the end zone scoring a touchdown.
Oof.
I just laughed. Oof. And walked away. And I loved it. It was great. It was my shining moment.
And then he put that L back in his pocket.
Sure did. Sure did.
He put it in his wallet and folded that up. And folded that wallet up and put it back in his pocket. Like, oh, you were
got him back.
This is mine.
I got him.
Got him.
But anyways, Jalen Dixon, man, great performance. I know everybody's been wanting to see more from him, and you got it. You got it Friday night. He meant a lot to the offensive performance on Friday night, as was Money, as was Thomas. Those guys were huge in the passing game. And that was really kind of the big thing. That was the emergence of the big play, right? That was Friday night was the big play game. It was the other guys. It was everybody else getting involved. It's what we've wanted to see from the Utah offense for a while now.
Before we get to the last person we really haven't touched on, and then I think we really got to wrap because I've got to catch a flight.
You do.
The last person we haven't touched on, I want to shout out to Utah's punting and kicking game, probably the best one of the season that night. Almost every kick was in the end zone. Only two got returned. And the punting game was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Punting game was phenomenal. So shout out there. But the last person, the ultimate, the other guy is JJ. Just an absolute, as much love as this offensive line gets. He was, I mean, on the podium to end the game appropriately, could have easily been, I think, the player of that game, the MVP, had it not been Cam. And absolutely thrilled to see him up there in that moment too. Just over 100 yards, two touchdowns, a couple of emphatic ones too. He ran over guys both times to get in the end zone. One was Braden Daniels.
Sorry, BD.
Got to get out of the way.
Yep.
He shouldn't have been standing there. But like, he was running so hard. In the fourth quarter especially, he was running angry. Like, talk about violence. It was not it was not just the defense. It was not just the offensive and defensive line. The running backs were running violently, both he and Mekhi.
Awesome.
He was, I don't know that I've seen a Utah running back have that much burst before the line of scrimmage before.
Well, this is what we've been talking about with him, right? In terms of athlete.
When he gets to the second level, he's already at a dead sprint.
It's impressive what he's able to do, what he did Friday night.
Again, there was one or two more plays where a linebacker gets a hand on him, and if he can just, you know, if he can get the balance to not go down when that with one arm on a leg, you know, if you can kind of get the strength to step through those arm tackles, he can outrun any safety to the end zone. That's not an issue. He might be really fun next year.
He's going to be really fun. He is the big play guy that Utah has lacked in the run game this year. He's what Utah has needed all season long. And it's good that he had the game Friday night that he did. It's a sign of his development. It's a sign of his potential. Man, super excited for JJ and his future. He looked great. Looked fantastic.
There was so much, again, thinking about this game going into it, a big question mark was still, we know a lot now about, you know, why Tavion isn't on the team, the toe injury, I obviously mean, like, not having him in this game was a huge question mark too. He was the best running back in the Pac-12 last year. He was expected by many to be Utah's workhorse. He was expected by one person on ESPN to be Utah's workhorse in this game, despite the toe injury. And like, Utah just didn't need him, just period.
No. Man, the collective effort and the depth in that room is impressive. The commitment to the run game, impressive. Awesome. Awesome win. To beat them 47-24 is just, it's so tasty. It is so tasty.
Before we sign off, which was tastier? Pac-12 championship number one against Oregon in the fashion that it happened, being the first,
or
number two, being the underdog, being not having supposed to have been there, being against the Heisman favorite, and then winning 47-24.
Honestly, and, you know, it – oh, man, that's so tough. But I think it's this one.
I do, too.
I think it's this one, right? Like, it felt like – last year it was destiny, that Utah was destined to win it. Like, this was, that was their year. This yep. one, who knew, right? It, like, we were all on.
I didn't.
Yeah,
I,
you know.
We discussed with some other media members before the game that we were, I mean, me and one of the others in particular were very confident Utah was losing this game.
Yeah.
I was.
There was concern. And I think Utah fans all kind of, you know, understood why, right? Like, this USC offense, Caleb Williams.
Right.
People talked about him as like Caleb Williams was God. Like, you can't rush him because he's better when he's pressured. Like, that's how they talked about him.
He was good. He is amazing. He is, yeah. But man,
it felt good. This one feels better.
I think this one was better too.
So much sweeter.
Last year felt like the Cinderella story.
Yeah.
And this year feels like, you know, Cinderella's a queen now. You know, Cinderella grew up. Cinderella's still here.
I love it. I love it, man. It, man, twice as nice. It just so perfect, baby. Back to back. Just, oh, it's so nice. So, man, we'll be back. We'll have another episode maybe later this week. You're going to San Francisco.
Yeah.
So enjoy that. That's a way to celebrate.
Yeah, it's work. So.
Oh, sorry. Well, okay. All right.
It'll be fine. It'll be good.
Man, enjoy this one, Utah fans. This one's special. This one is truly special. It's we had a lot of fun down there. It was awesome to see everybody down there as well. Appreciate you all for the support of the Utah Blockcast.
Sign up at utahblockcast.com.
And with that, we'll sign off.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.